B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
Just a great conversation with Jean-Paul Gaster today from the band Clutch. They're doing these live from the Doom Saloon simulcasts, which you can check out on the internet. Jean-Paul told me all about it.
It's a real stream. We do not pre-record this stuff. So what you see tomorrow night will be exactly what happened in the room.
We talk about the history of the band. We talk about the recent comments from Spotify's CEO. A super funny story that happened with the interview that I did with Neil a couple years back. Plus, if they're working on any new material right now.
Yeah, we've been writing some material. I would expect we'll get into the studio probably sometime this winter.
We talk about another project he's in with Lamb of God guitarist Mark Morton, about working their own record label, how Electric Worry is used as the goal celebration for the Vancouver Canucks, and what about growing up in Maryland and seeing all sorts of killer bands?
In fact, I saw Dave Grohl play with his punk rock band called Scream, probably in about 1988.
Clutch drummer Jean-Paul Gaster is my guest today on Talkin' Rock.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Hey, thanks so much for checking out the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. Back at it again. Man, the interviews have really been ramping up. There was a time back in like March and April of this year where even May where interviews were kind of few and far between. But now all sorts of bands are kind of starting to, light the fire and get back at it and do things like, for example, what Clutch is doing with their live streaming concert coming up on August the 7th. Jean-Paul will tell us how to get in contact and order that coming up here in just a little bit. In the meantime, if you haven't checked out the podcast before and this is your first shot, go back and listen. I've talked to some really great guests. I had Vixen frontwoman, former frontwoman, I should say, Janet Gardner on yesterday. John Anderson from Yes was on the other day. Rick Emmett from Triumph. I've had John Five on this year. Johnny Kelly from Typo Negative, JD from Black Label Society, all sorts of bands that might interest you if you like the stuff from Clutch. Go back and check out those, subscribe, and check back often as we're just updating this all the time. As a matter of fact, I did this killer interview with a pretty popular 80s rock singer for the most part, and I'm going to air that next week, which is a pretty good interview. In the meantime, talking with Jean-Paul here today from Clutch. I remember last time I talked to anybody from Clutch, it was Neil a couple years ago. And as I talk about coming up in the interview, I laughed so hard at something Neil said. I'll be honest, I've never laughed this hard in an interview before. He had me in tears, and we'll talk about that coming up here in just a bit. In the meantime, I called Jean-Paul, and he was actually at FedEx mailing out vinyl records because that's what they do. They own their own record label, and they do their own thing. And so we started off the conversation with, of course, me, asked him if he was going to mail some albums to me.
You know it. I got the vinyl coming to you right now.
Do you collect vinyl yourself?
Well, of course. Yeah, in fact, I have a dual turntable that I just recently had refurbished. My wife and I, we try to listen to a record just about every night. Maybe a little bit of Rolling Stones, maybe some Santana. My buddy Mike Dillon recently finished a record, and I was listening to his record on vinyl. We love it.
I've told this story before, but Johnny Chow from Stone Sour is a friend of mine, and he got me into it about 3.5 years ago, and I am like addicted. I went to Traverse City this past weekend up in northern Michigan, and I had to leave early just to visit the record store up there. So, you know, it's so cool. I bought like a reissued Slayer record and something else, but it's like it's just so much fun. I got about 400 or so. How many you got?
Maybe not quite as many as you got. I would say around 200, maybe.
I think one year I bought 163 because I keep track of this stuff, you know. It's like I'll go somewhere and I'll buy some records. And are you like me if you find a record that you really like and you have like kind of a not so great copy, do you search them out and try to find a pristine copy for yourself?
Of course, I can tell you for sure. I have several copies of Jimi Hendrix Band of Gypsies right now.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. That's cool. Well, let's get on with it here, Jean-Paul. It's funny because the only other person I know is Jean-Paul is the guy from Trailer Park Boys.
Oh, he's a Jean-Paul too? Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Julian.
All right.
You ever watch that show?
It's been a while, but yeah, we used to watch that on tour. That's a funny one.
I was going to say, it had to be like a tour bus thing to sit there and watch Trailer Park Boys, for sure.
Yeah, we had a good time doing it. It was a nice way to wind down after shows.
Yeah, no question about it. So live from the Doom Saloon, you guys did this first one on May 27th. You got another one coming up here on Friday night. So tell me about this, and you know, give me your thoughts on the whole Doom Saloon.
Well, the Doom Saloon is our rehearsal spot right here in Maryland. It's where we sort of run the band out of. We've got our gear here. We have a rehearsal spot, and then we run Weathermaker Records out of here. So we store all the vinyl and ship and receive all the product. And in fact, when you called earlier today, I was literally at FedEx shipping vinyl out. So it's, you know, it's the real thing. It's a hands-on business, and you know, we all pitch in. Live from the Doom Saloon is a series of concerts that we're playing from our rehearsal place right here. So tomorrow night will mark the second time we've done this in an official capacity. We've made some step up in production and lighting, and we're going to have a couple more cameras this time, so it's going to look a little bit more professional. But you know, at the end of the day, it's just jamming in our rehearsal place, live and direct. It's a real stream. We do not pre-record this stuff. So what you see tomorrow night will be exactly what happened in the room. And, you know, I think in some ways maybe that sets us apart from some of the other folks that are streaming out there these days.
Yeah, I think that I think you might be right, because I think that there are some, and I don't know this for sure. You probably know more about it than I do, but I think there might be some that do pre-record it and then just kind of post it. But I'm pretty sure there's bands doing it the same way you are. Now, tomorrow night, as we record this on Thursday, a fan gets to pick the entire set list. Is that right?
That's right.
So yeah, do you know the set list?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we know it now. We picked it last week. We opened up our entire catalog. So that goes all the way back to 1991's Pitchfork 7-inch. And we opened it up all the way through Book of Bad Decisions, our latest full-length release, and even some of the Vault series singles that we've been putting out even since then. So it's a tremendous amount of songs. And the fans just went through and picked out their favorite sets. And we picked one of the fan sets, and we learned it. It required us to do a little bit of homework, some stuff we haven't played in years. But, you know, we relish the challenge, and it's been a lot of fun getting together and playing those songs.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, is it one of those things where even though you wrote and recorded those songs, you know, that there might be a few where you're like, man, I really have to shake off the rust on this one because I don't really remember it, or I got to, you know, once you start playing them, does it just come right back to you or what?
It does come back to you, but it does require, you know, you got to pay attention to it a little bit. We listen to the song a few times. We'll run it maybe once or twice and then listen back again to see how well we did, if it's in keeping with the original. And once we feel comfortable with that, then the song starts to loosen up. You know, I never really play the songs the same way twice ever. So once I kind of get an idea of like of where my headspace was at, you know, those 30 years ago.
Yeah.
I start to, you know, I play the song the way I would play it now. But still keep the essence of the tune there. And I think we're all trying to do that.
Now, is this one of those things where you guys just play and jam like a regular like concert, or is it kind of like a storyteller thing too, where Neil might, you know, talk about the song or whatever?
Well, this one's going to be a no nonsense sort of one song after the other. In fact, we were rehearsing yesterday, and we were conscious of the time that lapses in between the songs. You know, that's one of the things that makes a streaming show, I think, somewhat awkward for both the band and the fans. You know, is that
right?
In between songs, we are so used to having the sound of the crowd, and that, you know, obviously we don't have that here. So that makes this environment a little different, and so we're aware of that, and so we're gonna try to compensate by just sort of stripping this thing down and just playing one song after the other. We do have a few breaks, and I think Neil will say a few things in between here and there, but overall, I think we're gonna try to tighten the show up and try to We're going to try to make it look a little more professional.
Yeah, you know, it's in my business, it's called dead air. And, of course, you know, it's like when you have dead air, you're like, it's like this awkward silence for sure. You know, it's so funny you mentioned it. But, yeah, I remember I talked to Neil a couple years ago, and I was telling your publicist this earlier that I've never laughed so hard in an interview than when Neil started telling me about his son and how his son told him he was the worst pitcher on the planet. Dude, I was like in the studio crying because apparently he was trying to play baseball with his son in Bond or something, and I guess he wasn't doing a very good job, and his kid just laid him out. So you probably know that story a little bit better than I do, like, you know, knowing him and his kid or something, but he told me that story and I was practically in tears. So.
Yeah, well, he's a very funny guy, and I, you know, I've known Neil for a long time, and he's talented in many, many ways. But I think he would be fine with me saying that I do not think sports is one of his strong points.
That was the vibe I got. Yeah.
Hey, neither is mine either. You know, I mean, I'm a drummer, and I'm a probably pretty crummy pitcher as well.
but are you the worst pitcher in the world? That's the whole thing.
Oh my goodness, that's quite a title to hold.
Right, especially coming from a six-year-old who I'm assuming hasn't had that many people pitch to him. Oh, man, that was so funny. Hey, speaking of that, you know, you just mentioned, like, you know, Neil's funny. You know, you guys have really been the core of the group for going on three decades right now. What is the key to keeping four guys happy and just kind of creative together?
Well, you know, we get asked that a lot, and I think that really it just boils down to the music. You know, when we started this band 30 years ago, the idea really was just to, you know, we wanted to play some shows. We wanted to do some good recordings, and that was really the beginning and the end of it. We did not think that we were going to make a career out of this thing. We certainly didn't think we would be here 30 years later. We just wanted to make music and have fun and just sort of hang with other bands that were of like minds, you know. Mm-hmm. And man, we've been able to do that, and here we are still to this day. And I think it's because when we started, the motives really were so pure. We did not have the intention of making a career out of this. Playing stadiums was certainly not in our thoughts. Being on the radio wasn't even in our thoughts. You know, we really just did this for the music. And over the years, that's sort of been our beacon. You know, that's our North Star in a lot of times, because, you know, this is a tough business, and there are a lot of peripheral energies that get focused on the band from time to time that are nothing to do with being creative, and that can be tough. So when you focus on the music, I think that really kept it all together.
And then when you guys decided to, like, you know, go off on your own and kind of do your own record label and things, was that a no-brainer for you guys, or did you guys discuss and talk about that, or how does that work?
Absolutely. That was at the time that we did it. That was right around 2006. You know, we had been around by that point for, man, 15 years. Dealing with many labels,
right,
in different capacities. I mean, we were on independent labels, we were on major labels, and we were on independent labels that acted like major labels. And so it was always a stressful time dealing with that end of it. And, you know, when we finished our last obligation to DRT, which was the last record label that we signed to, we knew that the writing was on the wall. You know, we said to ourselves, look, we can start this record label, and even if we do a crummy job, it's going to be better than what we see these days, because at that point, the industry really was starting to change. You could see that physical sales were on their way down. Streaming hadn't taken a hold of just yet, but we knew that the climate was changing, and to sign to another label would have just been ludicrous. So, you know, we hired one of our friends to help us put this label together, and we just started doing it, man. We just started slinging vinyl, and here we are, you know, almost 15 years later, and each release is a learning experience. You know, we're still figuring this thing out, but it's certainly, it's a labor of love. You know, when I was at FedEx today shipping that vinyl out, I'm still proud of that, you know. And it makes being in the business that much more enjoyable.
Yeah, you're really, really in the business. A lot of these bands have to, you know, have people that deal with them and all this other stuff. So looking back on it, you say it's, you know, it's a labor of love and stuff. Good decision. Would you recommend other bands do this, or is it just something that just kind of fit you guys?
No, I would definitely recommend that other bands do this. I often say that if you're a band and you are not actively engaged in getting your music out there, then you're just putting off the inevitable. You know, it's just a matter of time before the labels just sort of become non-existent. At this point, you know, a label is pretty much just a bank. And now with the technology that we have available to us, it's easy for a young band to gain some followers. It's much easier to record music than it was 25 years ago. It's certainly less expensive. Mm. And so we can use these tools and use them to our advantage, you know, and it's now is the time for sure.
So I didn't have this like in my notes, but you were just talking with you. I was just thinking about this. The guy from Spotify came out the other day and said the band should just try to start putting out more music and stuff. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I saw that, right? So there was it Sebastian Bach was pretty upset by that. Maybe a couple other ones were.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it reminds me of the kind of conversations that I had with folks who worked at labels back in the 90s, you know, that the bands just need to work harder. They just need to produce more. And really what that means is that the bands put a lot of energy into making money for other entities. And so if you can minimize that, you know, that's really where you want to be. It's tough out there. I will say that the streaming income that a lot of the bands are seeing now, us included, is better than it used to be, for sure. But it's still, you know, fractions of a penny for each play, and I think that part of it is unfair.
Yeah, you're making a lot of money for some other people, and you're not getting the rewards. I hear you there. So you talk about, you know, how it's easier to record and make music and stuff now. So your last record came out in 2018. Are you guys have anything in the works for another new album?
Yeah, we've been writing some material. I would expect we'll get into the studio probably sometime this winter. So for us, the last couple months have been taken up sort of just trying to figure out how to do these streaming gigs, because that was something that we had never even entertained before this thing happened. And the first one was a great success. We pulled it off using Neil's laptop, believe it or not. That was the camera. We purchased a couple consoles that we travel with to mix the band. And so we were able to use those in this situation. That ended up being a really good investment. So, you know, for not much, we were able to put something together that I think people enjoyed, and we certainly enjoyed doing it. Tomorrow night we're going to do the next installment of that, and it's going to be a lot of fun. We're rehearsing for that right now.
Now you talk about like how things are different for the past 25 years, you know, technology and stuff. But I mean, things are different from the beginning of the year with how bands have to you know, kind of interact and touch their fans, like you're just talking about. And it's like this is really for a lot of people been kind of a wake up call as to try to do different things. I've been doing these Instagram interviews, which I've never done before, and now all of a sudden those are starting to pop. The streaming, I mean, it's like it's been a crazy past 4 or 5 months for the record, or I shouldn't say the record, for the bands, hasn't it?
It certainly has, and you're right. I think bands are really searching for ways to engage with their fans and get their music out there, share their music to other fans. It's really difficult, you know. And in so many ways, we are very fortunate because we are established. We've been around for a very long time. We're fortunate enough to have a fan base that's passionate about the music, and we are super thankful for that. But, you know, I really feel for the younger bands, you know, the bands who are just getting together, the band who just put out their first record, the band who was going to, you know, spend this summer on tour for the first time. I feel bad for those guys because those are the artists that are going to keep this thing going, you know, in 20 to 25 years, and to not have the opportunity to get out there and just do the playing part of it, you know, setting aside being able to play in front of crowds. Of course, that's important, but just the action of getting out there and banging it out every night, you know, playing six nights a week to, you know, 15 or 20 people, That is invaluable for a band. That's really how a band cuts its teeth, how a band finds its identity. And not being able to have those venues open is going to be tough for a lot of years to come. I feel like in some ways we're sort of stunting the growth of music because of this thing that's going on.
Yeah, I can imagine. You know, back in the early '90s when you guys were just starting to pop, if you had to put a record out and had to sit on it for 2 years and not play it, or play it in front of the fans, I should say, it probably drove you crazy.
Absolutely. And it's tough because you spend so much of your childhood getting ready for, you know, that first record.
Right.
And, you know, something like this to happen. It's tragic and it's sad. And further to that, it's not even just the bands. You know, I think about the young athletes that are out there, too. As I said, I'm certainly not an athlete. But, the kids that are out there working really hard to make a basketball scholarship or a gymnastics scholarship, you know, all that kind of stuff is sort of put on the back burner now. And it's a tough time. I feel for the young kids.
And even, you know, people closer to your business, I've said this before, but the roadies and the techs and stuff, it's like these guys jump from tour to tour, sometimes maybe not even taking vacations or whatnot. And now they're not working. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's tough for them too. There's an entire industry that's sort of put on hold. Bus drivers, truck drivers, caterers, roadies. You know, it goes on, man.
Yeah. So you got this other project you're doing too with Mark Morton, the Morton Gaster Papadopoulos. That doesn't exactly roll off the tongue, but tell us about that.
Well, you know, I've known Mark for a lot of years. He plays in a band called Lamb of God, and those guys are from Richmond, Virginia, which is just down the way from us. So I think in a lot of ways we grew up listening to the same bands and probably saw a lot of the same shows. It's great. I very much appreciate his playing. He's an incredible player. And then Yanni Papalopoulos is from Philadelphia. And we did a lot of tours with the band that he was in called Stinking Lizaveta, which was kind of this sort of jazz punk instrumental band. And so Yanni plays bass in this band and Mark plays guitar. And it's a lot of fun. It's really just a jam. You know, we got together a couple of years ago, recorded some stuff. Now that the pandemic's happened, we have not been able to get together. But, when this thing clears up, I'm hoping that we can get together and make some more music.
Is there any other projects or any other groups that you've worked with recently or we might hear about in the next couple of years?
Sure. Yeah. I whenever I get the chance, I try to play with other folks. I enjoy that. I enjoy the experience of learning other people's material. It's a challenge to me to be able to be true to the song that those folks wrote. You know, I'm in a side project called Spy Machines, which is available on Spotify right now. That's my buddy Mark Stanley on guitar, and he also wrote the songs and did the vocals. And then Henry Upton from the band Lion Eyes, some good friends of ours, he plays bass on that. So that band's called Spy Machines, and you can check that out on Spotify now. It's kind of progressive, sort of funky, sort of Frank Zappa-ish, maybe a little Primus-ish. It's out there, and it definitely doesn't sound like Clutch. And for me, that's fun. I wouldn't want to do a side project that sounded like Clutch because, you know, I already do that, you know?
I already do that in another project, yeah. Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned Frank Zappa because he's one of the artists I've really gotten into in the last couple of years. Just throw the vinyl on. I've never really gave Frank Zappa much of a listen. Of course, I knew the hits and stuff, but it's like some of that stuff is just so good. The musicianship on some of those records is amazing.
No doubt about it. Musicianship and the range of songwriting. And, you know, I think one of my favorite parts about it, too, is the humor that's in there. You know,
yeah.
I think so many times, bands take themselves a little too seriously. And, the humor goes a long way, especially when, you know, you've been together as a band for as many years as we have. You know, it's good for us. We love a good joke.
Yeah, right. Now, I know you guys do. Now, you guys are from the Maryland area. And I was trying to think as you were talking about other Maryland bands. And you mentioned Lamb of God's down the road or whatnot. But isn't the band Kix from your area?
Certainly. Yeah,
okay.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. They live, or they started just right up the road from we are. They're in a little town called Hagerstown. And in fact, it was a lot of fun. We did a festival with Kix in Sweden 2 years ago, and I got to meet a couple of those guys. And yeah, that was great. Those guys have been around for a long time. They're sort of a Maryland legendary rock and roll band. Great band too, you know, great songs and cool tones. Maryland's got quite a history of bands that I think have been influential. Probably the first one that comes to mind is the Bad Brains.
Yeah.
They were associated with the early DC punk rock scene. And although I think, you know, you could certainly call them a punk rock band, they were so much more important than that. I think they really transcended that music and they inspired, you know, different genres for generations to come after that. Definitely one of my favorite bands.
And that's where Dave Grohl kind of, he kind of got his start in that area, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. In fact, I saw Dave Grohl play with his punk rock band called Scream, probably in about 1988. And he's definitely part of the DC punk rock scene. You know, we had great bands like Fugazi, and then we had, you know, heavier stuff too, like Pentagram and The Obsessed. So we were lucky to have all kinds of stuff going on here in DC.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, I've always liked Kix. They've always been one of those bands because I'm about your age, you know, and I always kind of liked them. You know, they had some good songs and the singer was so great. I don't know if I've ever seen them in concert, and I know I've never interviewed any of those guys, which is kind of weird, but, you know, maybe somewhere down the road. Hey, a couple more. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, they're still at it, man. They're still playing.
Yeah, no, I see that they're playing here and there, and they play like the M3 festivals and different things like that. It'd be cool to check them out one time. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But, hey, a couple more things here, and we'll cut you loose. I didn't get a chance to ask Neil about this a couple years ago. Maybe I forgot about it. But what was your thoughts when the Vancouver Canucks starts using one of your songs as a goal celebration?
Oh, man, that's the greatest. I think it was a Clutch fan that let us know that was happening. You know, it's crazy how our music pops up in these different venues that you wouldn't expect for there to be Clutch fans. And so, it made us feel great, obviously. And, you know, I'm a pretty crappy hockey player. But I'm glad to enjoy our music, I can tell you that.
Were you ever, did you ever get a chance to go to any of the games and see it in action?
No, I did not. I did go to a Washington Capitals game one time, though, and that was pretty great.
Yeah, no, yeah, it's that would have been cool if you were touring around Vancouver and got to go check out a game, and maybe they could have put you up in a suite or something, man. Come on, now they're using your song.
Come on.
Yeah. Hey, final thing here for you. So I'm a couple years older than you. I celebrated my 50th last year. You got yours coming up next year. I know you probably haven't even thought about this, but any plans for your 50th?
Well... Hell, I'd just be thrilled to death if we could play a show.
There you go. Hey, 50 ain't that bad, man. You're going to have fun. It'll be great. But, hey, man, listen, thanks so much for the time. You got the Weathermaker Vault Series, all sorts of stuff coming out, of course, live from the Doom Saloon. Tell everybody they can just pop on the website and they can grab that. It's like $9, right?
That's correct. Yeah, tickets are $9. Go to clutchmerch.com. You can get tickets there, and you can watch the show from there. That also happens to be our merch site, so if there's other stuff that you want to pick up, that's a great time to do it. We'll have some music on sale, too, and the show starts at 8 o'clock, and we are excited to get out there and do it. It's not a substitute for a real show, but it's the closest thing to it.
Yeah, especially right about now. So, yeah, go buy some merch, or you have to go back to FedEx and do some more work here. So,
yeah. That's fine by me.
I just did a podcast the other day where somebody was actually interviewing me, and I said to him, I said, you know what? There's a difference between just interviewing rock stars and interviewing good people. And though I've never met Jean-Paul before, you can just tell he's a good guy. And it's like, to me, that makes it all worthwhile. Hope you guys dug this today. Jean-Paul from Clutch, and like I said, live from the Doom Saloon happening August the 7th. And these things are really cool. $9 gets you in, put it through your stereo speakers. I mean, crank it up in the house. Nice Friday night. Get some, crack open some bourbon, some beers, whatever you got, and sit back and listen to Clutch go through this set. Sounds really cool. Sounds good to me, as a matter of fact, as, of course, we're missing all sorts of live music. Hey, like I said earlier in the podcast, if you... like this podcast, give it a 5-star rating on Apple and iTunes. I guess I didn't say that earlier, but subscribe. I did say that earlier, as we've got a bunch of interviews locked and loaded and are ready to roll here as we cruise through this weird summer of 2020. I'm just thinking about writing a blog about how, like, there's so many things I miss. I miss riding my motorcycle with my friends from Canada. I miss, live concerts, obviously. I miss really talking to the fans of the not only the radio station, but just music fans in general. When I go out to live events, it's really time to, it's a great time to talk with people when you go out there about, you know, like-minded things like music and different stuff like that. So we'll get through this together one day at a time. In the meantime, thank you so much for checking out Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. We'll do it all over again real soon.